Yo, it's Barry all by himself. Yeah, I got, it's been a while, so I decided that since we haven't been able to coordinate an episode, I'd hop on here by myself and just kind of let it roll, see what comes out on the other end, you know? So I actually wanted to do a whole entire series on the World Cup, but because of my main work, I couldn't really get, I didn't have the time or the energy to get down and do it, but I have a chance now, and it's the World Cup just ended. As you guys all know, Germany won. Yeah, they were able to come back from the dead, and due to some mumbo jumbo loophole in the World Cup, FIFA wanted Germany to be in the next stage, and so they moved on. Oddly enough, there was an uproar. A lot of hashtags, how did this happen, FIFA, you know, hashtag corrupt FIFA, hashtag lock them up. I don't know, it was weird. It was really weird, but here we are. They won the World Cup. Not a lot of people are happy. They're very upset, except for quite a few of those German guys. They're pretty happy about it, but not the rest of the world. Clearly, that's all BS. France won, and with some controversy. The first foul wasn't really a foul. Their first penalty kick, penalty was that they got awarded, was highly questionable. It looked like the defender was already in the process of having his arm go down, and then the ball hit his hand. So if you ever hear the hand to ball or ball to hand, it basically says that if the player's hand, in a case of hand to ball, it means that the player had the intention of getting the hand in the way of the ball's way, as opposed to having the ball hit the player's hand accidentally. And what could be considered an unnatural movement, those are more up for interpretation. A lot of what I saw was people saying that it wasn't a penalty kick, excuse me, but due to their new video assistant referee system, the ref got to see it again, and he made the judgment call of giving a penalty. It's dicey. I mean, we all know that the VAR was supposed to kind of help make the game more fair, and a lot of people were saying that the video assistant referee system would hinder the game, that it will no longer be about people like refs making judgment calls, and it will take away that spice of the game, but clearly it did not. I mean, you still have this judgment called here where most of the people thought it wasn't a penalty, and yet here we are. France went up. Granted, they did score two more goals, but you gotta say that those two calls could have changed the game, definitely. At that point, you had France go up 1-0. Croatia came back to 1-1. Then you get the PK right before the end of the half, and that sets up the mood for a 2-1 going into the half. Then you have a couple of brilliant plays by the France team, and really not so much as great plays, but a couple of great moments of skill from those French players, and they were able to go up 4-1. That's insane, right? 4-1, and then France's goalkeeper makes an incredible mistake that Mandzukic was able to just get in there. He pressured and he got his foot on the ball and it goes in, and then you're looking at a 4-2, and as you all know, being 4-2 down is way better than being 4-1. Logic says that at a 4-1 you kind of give up, but that's not Croatia. This whole entire tournament, they've been playing with a lot of heart and a lot of teamwork. They have a few key players that are able to do things, and that's that, and that copy compounded with their effort and heart, took them all the way to the final when nobody thought they'd do. They weren't even in the running at the beginning of the tournament. Now, that's a good segue to go to the beginning of the tournament. We had a very unusual World Cup where a lot of prior World Cup winners were taken out, either in the group stage or directly in the next, in the first round of eliminations. The first team that really nobody could believe that they wouldn't make it past the group stage was Germany. Now, during this game, between their opening game with Mexico, was unexpected to an extent. I think it said more about the German team than the Mexican team. Before the World Cup started, I've been talking to some people that watch quite a bit of football, and a few people that actually a little bit more involved in that world. I honestly didn't think that Mexico would be able to win. I didn't see it. I didn't think that Germany would have this bad of a World Cup and Mexico would be okay enough to get past them. And a lot of people were like, you gotta have faith. I honestly didn't. I looked at what had happened leading into the World Cup and it just did not add up. I should have probably looked at Germany a little bit more. But again, logic dictates that Germany should have won that game. Any like 9 times out of 10, it just so happened that this one time it was the 10th time and Mexico was able to do it. Prior to this game, I remember saying to my friends, hey, Mexico hasn't been able to score, and they hadn't prior to that, and their defense could become very wonky. They tended to lose their shape quite a bit, allowing opposite player opposing players to get behind their backs and essentially getting on a one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Now, we have a pretty good goalkeeper in Guillermo Ochoa Memo. And as I've been following his career since he started in America back so long ago. So I knew he was good. We all know he was good. We saw what he did in 2014 against Brazil. That just put what he does week in and week out with his clubs in the forefront for everybody to see. He hasn't been fortunate enough to be in a decent team to where he can really display what he has. Usually playing with, besides America, he's been playing with teams that were fighting to stay alive. I mean, Ajaccio in France had recently promoted to League One, and they took a gamble on him. It paid off. He did quite well for them and helped them stay afloat for a while. Then after 2014, he went to Malaga, where there was it happens. A coach has more faith on a player, so he'll choose him over the other. And being a goalkeeper is really ruthless because there's only one position. There's only one position and one player that can play that position in a game. If you're a forward, you can fight for time. I mean, if the harsh reality is that as a forward, if you miss one, you always get a chance to score another. As a goalkeeper, if you miss one, that's one against your team most of the time. And that being said, Memo still did pretty well for them. The games he did get to play in, he did pretty well, usually doing enough to help him out. Anyway, sorry. I also have the final on repeat right now. It's playing in the background, so I'm also watching that. And Griezmann just went down. Let's see. And there was no touch. The Croatian player didn't. I don't think he did enough to merit being called for a foul. It was a very, if anything, it looks like he was already going down before there was contact made. And I believe it's the 17th minute right now, so I believe there's going to be, this is the the shot on goal from a free kick. Griezmann's about to take it, left footed, wearing some nice cleats there. Two-toned, teal color with gray. We have 6 French players in the area, one lingering outside. And Mandzukic doesn't own goal. He heads the ball. He does enough and puts it in the top right corner. So it's an own goal. So in fairness to Croatia, they scored 3 goals in that game. Just so happens that one was against themselves. Clearly that's painful. That's a very painful thing to do, especially at a World Cup final, to score on your own team. But I mean, it's how the game goes. Anyways, going back to the Germany and Mexico game, sorry to be all over the place again. I mean, that's our style. That's my style. I just go with whatever pops in my head. It doesn't make for very good structure, but whatever. So where were we? We were talking about Memo Ochoa. He's very good. So, I mean, he did great in Malaga. He attempted to do well. The other thing that goes against him in playing in a bigger club is that he is not a European player. So that means that he plays as a foreigner, essentially, meaning that if a team wants to have him in their lineup, then there's how can I explain it? It's essentially what it feels like it in broad terms and brushes. Certain leagues, most leagues, I should say, have a certain amount of players that you can have in your team that aren't native to that country, or in this case, to the European Union. So somebody coming from South America, from the U.S., North America, Africa, Asia, they take up a foreigner slot. Now, I can't remember how many they have in the Spanish league. In Mexico, years ago, it used to be 3, and it's been going up and up to 5 and 6, I think, or... something ridiculous to where they're allowed to have more foreigners in their squad that they can put on the field. And this is not a slight against foreigners coming into leagues and taking up spots for national players. The main difference here is that, let's say, for our sport of football, we have a championship, a tournament like the World Cup, where you can only field your national players. Now, that being said, you could also have players that have taken up your citizenship and have not played for your home national team. So if you're a player from, let's say, from the U.S. that it has a Mexican heritage, you can play for the Mexico national team. Now, what happens is when you're coming up through the youth development system and you're playing in U17, U21, U20, whatever World Cups, you can play for a different national team. It's not until you play for the senior team, the senior national team, that you get to stay with that group now. So if you're a player that has Mexican heritage and you decide to play with the U.S. national team all the way up to U21, but then you decide that you're going to be playing for the Mexican team, you can, and vice versa, and it has happened. There's a goalkeeper for León who was born in Mexico of American parents, and... he decided, and he plays for León, and he has played for León throughout his whole career since he was a young kid. But he decided that he wanted to rep the U.S., and he can do that, and that's awesome. It's just talking more about the melting pot that this whole entire world is coming to. I mean, there's no real, like, player that is from any given place, really. That's going by the wayside, and it seems to be more of a nurture versus nature sort of thing, where if you were born in another country, I mean, France, the team that won the World Cup, had 19 players that were either immigrants or products of immigrants for France. That's crazy. That's a lot. And I mean, and it's awesome all at once. You see different cultures coming together in a country, and then those kids that also feel their African heritage in most cases also want to defend their home country now, which is France. It's amazing. Going back to the Mexico and Memo Ochoa thing, so since he is not a European European player, he would take up a slot as a foreigner, and most teams are not willing to use up a slot for a goalkeeper in that as a non-European player. It to them, it makes more sense to bring in either somebody from inside the field, well, outside the field, I should say. Just because you have so many more opportunities to field other national players around them. And you bring in those players to take up spots to really show off, to help your club shine brighter. And it's really tough for a goalkeeper to come from outside to be a foreigner and do it. Up until Memo Ochoa, I want to say, if memory serves, that there hasn't been a Mexican goalkeeper that to play in Europe until him. And that's amazing. And it's great that he's doing it, and that it's great that it's him, a player with such talent. I mean, he debuted at 17, 18 years old in America, with America. So that's amazing. So we go back to, you can hear people outside. I have the door open because it's bloody hot in here. That's my brother-in-law. That's my son. Grandma. Anyway, so during the Mexico-Germany team, just to go back to the World Cup here, I honestly thought that Mexico weren't going to be able to do it, but Germany didn't end up having a good tournament. And I mean, that's just evident by their other games, losing to South Korea and barely winning the one against, I want to say they won against Sweden. And it was insane. It's crazy that happened. I did not believe that. I wanted to, but I did not believe we were going to beat Brazil either. It was going to be a hard game. It had to be a game where you were perfect back in defense and scoring your one shot. Kind of like against Germany, and I kind of predicted that. I hate to say, it sounds like I'm tooting my horn, but I was talking to a friend of mine who is involved in football and whatnot, and I was telling him, like, the only way Mexico wins is if Germany has a mediocre team, mediocre game. Mexico plays again in the counterattack. We score one, and we hold on for dear life. And essentially, that ended up playing out exactly. I mean, between Herrera, Lozano, and Chicharo, of all players, they did pretty good out there, and they were able to secure the win and then make it the upset of the group stage. The other team that was kind of surprising to have made it as far as they did was Russia. I didn't think they were going to make it that far. And naturally, Croatia making it all the way to the final with a team that, like I said, nobody thought that they would make it too far. But here, there they went, and then they did an amazing job. I was rooting for them the whole way. It's a great team. I just love the dedication, having gone to extra time and all their games to try to keep staying alive as long as they could, to keep making an impressive run even greater. There's a Mexican flag in the background of the Croatia-France game. Argentina. Let's see what else. What other flags? A German flag I think I see in there. Yeah, they had an impressive run. I really wanted them to win. I really wanted a new World Cup winner. Oh, what a beautiful shot. I'm not going to be able to say Percevic. That was an amazing, I want to say it was a left-footed strike from a cross from Luka Modric to the right winger, crossing it back. Here we go. Oh, it was a free kick. Headed back, another header, pass back, control to the left, shoot with the right across. And there was nothing the France goalkeeper could do. There was too many legs, too much of an obstructed view, really well struck. Ball had very little movement. It was just amazing. Well placed. Oh, it took a deflection off of Varane, I want to say. The Real Madrid center defender there. Well, that's been emblematic of the way they had been playing this whole entire tournament. They scored against themselves, and it took them about 10 minutes to try to get one back and crawl back and try to stay in it. It's just amazing. It's one of the reasons I really wanted them to win it. France, I like them too, but I feel like they have bigger stars. They have a bigger... they have more skilled players, and as much as I love skilled players, I really... really prefer hard teamwork, well-built team play to get you the wins. Because when your players can't, if you have a talented team and you're relying on their talent alone to get you through, there's a higher chance that they're going to have a bad game. And that's, you can be depending on one player having a few good moments in a game to win you the game. And that's evident from some teams where their star player isn't at 100%, or he didn't show up for the game really, and the team suffers quite a bit because most of the play is dependent on them to get you the wins, or to put you in a great put you in places to be able to get the opportunities to get ahead. Yeah, that's why most of the time I like to root for the teams that are the underdogs and teams that put forward their teamwork over talent alone. I mean, but when you get a team that has all of those things put together, it's just they're magic on the field. And you can just recall teams like the Spanish team that won the Euro and the World Cup, and if I remember, they won the Euro again, so they had a sandwich Euro World Cup Euro. What they did best was they had a combination of tiki taka from Barcelona and a great lethality of Real Madrid. That was just, I just get mesmerized by teams like that. Let's see here. Maybe I'll just switch my focus now to try to break down what I see in the game. Let's see. I'm pretty sure that France is playing with a back four line, and they're playing with one forward and two. It's weird. I think if you're reading it right, then Giroud is playing as the left forward. Then you have Griezmann as your top striker and Mbappe on the right side. And there's four and three midfielders with Pogba, Umtiti. I'm not very knowledgeable when it comes to the France team. And I mean, when you really think about it, 32 teams go into the World Cup, and it's hard to keep everyone straight just off the top of your head. Actually, it looks more like it's a 4-4-2 with four defensive line, four midfielders, and two strikers with Giroud and Griezmann switching off, essentially becoming a 4-4-1-1 most of the time, with Griezmann and Giroud switching off who's the top striker there. Usually that's kind of how most teams play now when they're playing a 4-4-2. It's a 4-1-1. What's becoming more trendy is a 3-5-1-1, really. Just because you can't, most teams aren't playing with two strikers in a line. They usually have a striker over the top and then one that shadows him that kind of links up play with them. The old way of setting it up is you have a strong, tall striker be operating as a post where he knocks the ball down for your more skillful player and try to link up with those two players and try to create something. France just is calling for the handball. I don't know. It looks like Perisic, who scored the goal for the tie, was trying to get his hand out of the way. But in doing that, he just knocked his hand directly into the path of the ball, knocking it away. And Giroud is begging for the handball. Hernandez is begging for the handball. The whole entire France team is really begging for the handball. Ref is talking to the VAR. Referees up top who are looking at the play with a replay. Now he's made the sign that he's going to go see it himself and make up his mind about it. And this is no different than if he had to make the call without any of that assistant. Now, because he has to make a judgment call, he at least is getting to see it again and try to reaffirm his first notion or maybe see something he didn't see. In this case, I think he made a mistake. It looks like Perisic is making the hand motion to try to get his hand away, trying to bring his leg up, move his hand out of the way so he doesn't hit the ball with his hand. Now, that did not happen. He actually hit the ball with his hand. But again, it's ball to hand, not hand to ball, and that makes a world of difference. Intentions matter. Black lives matter. Just to bring that in a little bit. it's a difficult call, really. In the moment, you put yourself in the referee's place. He is at a World Cup final. 4 years of hard work. Essentially coming down to one play for Croatia. And to know now that they're going to go down 2-1, it's heartbreaking. Yep, and he called the PK. So here we go. Sorry for all you guys who don't watch football. Fuck off. I don't... This is more for me. I was bored. I needed to do something for myself. Kind of driving myself insane with work. So I just needed something to take my mind off of it. And I decided to get on and make a podcast. Vida is talking to his goalkeeper, trying to get him motivated, let him know that no matter what, they have his back. They believe in him. I mean, what else can you do for your goalkeeper, right? You gotta tell your teammate, you got this. You got this. You will do this. No matter what happens, we're behind you. But you got this. Griezmann's gonna take the penalty kick. When I first saw it, I thought he was gonna go bottom right. And I can't remember right now which way he goes, but he's about to take it. Oh, I love these open shots where they show how small the players look compared to the stadium back in the background with all the fans and how small the goal looks. I mean, when you're a goalkeeper and you're at a PK, that goal just seems so fucking big. When you're kicking it, it seems to not be big enough. And it looks, let's see, he has taken 5 penalties for France and he's made them all so far. That was the stat. Oh shit, I'm getting tired, mates. Alright. Yeah. Ref is telling everybody to stay behind, to stay outside the box. Because if they invade the area, then they technically the ref can have the shot, have to be to take the shot again. Whistle blows. Griezmann goes bottom right to the goalie. I usually say bottom right to in perspective of the keep of the person taking the shot. So he went bottom right to the goalkeeper, bottom left from the shooter's shot perspective. Oh man, they must be gutted. They must have been gutted. Yeah, so it was an interesting World Cup overall. There was a lot of unusualness. There was a lot of teams that I thought, at least in conventional wisdom, would tell you we're going to keep going. Just because I'm Mexican and I watch the Mexican national team whenever they play, kind of a fan. I watch it, but I also look at it with a critical eye. I don't just drink the Kool-Aid like a lot of people. You have to take things with a grain of salt with that the media tells you, especially certain outlets will paint things with rose-colored glasses just because they stand to make a lot more money out of it. Especially here in the U.S. and in Mexico, I mean, you have a national team that essentially is a two-country national team. You have Mexico, and then you have a great portion of the U.S. who will follow the Mexico national team just inherently. And I've been part of the problem as well, because when they come over here, and if it's close enough, I have gone to some of the shittier games, and that is not helpful when you don't play in a competitive confederation. I'm kind of losing my train of thought here in, well, the structure I wanted to put it in. Mexico plays a lot of friendlies in the U.S., and usually it's not against good teams. Usually it's against shittier teams, and it all comes down to money. If you want to bring in a team like Spain, you have to pay quite a lot of money. So if, say, Mexico wants to bring the national team to play Spain in Texas, for instance, it's going to cost them a lot more money to bring Spain in, and that's going to cut into their profits. Now, when Mexico comes to the U.S., they usually sell out the location. So from a business standpoint, why would you bring in a team to play against that will cost you more to bring in than to bring another team that costs you a lot less if your space is limited and you're only limited by the amount of seats that are available? Either way, you're going to sell out. So from a profit place, a place of business, you will take the team that costs you less. No different than if you were going to sell a shoe and you needed, people were going to buy your shoe regardless of how you make it. You probably will go with the cheaper alternative if people are still going to buy it in droves. Now, you get into a problem there with quality. I mean, it makes sense. If you make a shitty shoe, I mean, eventually your customer base will probably end up leaving just because they constantly have to keep buying it, and from an owner of that brand or that shoe, if you will, it's great to keep getting repeat buyers, but at a certain point you do erode that goodwill. And unfortunately for the Mexico national team, I don't think enough fans are there yet. There's too much money involved for them to let it go fall to bits. I feel like it's starting to turn, just because this is the eighth world. I want to say it's the eighth World Cup in a row that Mexico has only made it to the round of 16s, and they get out at the rounds of 16s. I mean, it's ridiculous. I might be wrong with that, but I think it's 94, 98, 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014, and 2018 now. So yeah, it's quite a bit that they haven't made it past the round of 16. And I feel like people are getting sick of it. Much like, to put a parallel, is like a lot of people here are getting sick with the status quo with politics and how it just seems like nothing's ever going to change. And the divide keeps getting bigger. Well, with the football in Mexico, it feels kind of similar because we keep getting players that are higher quality are playing outside of Mexico, we're playing in competitive leagues, but we still haven't been able to crack that shell since 82. I want to say that they made it to the quarterfinals. All the players in the national team seem to think that they could do it this time. And I don't want to say that they were just saying it to drum up baseless hope that they actually thought they were going to be able to do it. I honestly didn't think they could do it. I didn't see leading up to it. They didn't have as much scoring, and when it came to defending, they were getting scored quite a bit. There was a couple of games here and there where, excuse me, they showed that they could probably play at a pretty good caliber, especially that Belgium game. It looked like, oh, okay, this whole entire time we were doubting you, but you have the ability to do it. But I think it's more of that thing that happened against Germany. It wasn't so much what we were doing or as opposed to what they weren't doing. There's a game of preparation as well for the World Cup. It was one of the tail end games. And at that point, you're still tinkering a little bit now here and there with your team. And now with the Mexico national team, the last three, four years, there was this thing where the head coach was doing a lot of rotations in terms of who he fielded on the field. I don't think that he didn't repeat a single selection of players for a game in his entire tenure leading up to the World Cup. He never repeated a lineup, which is insane because most great teams, that's how you have your team gel and have a cohesiveness. That's how you get to know your teammates and where they are essentially any given moment of the game. It goes against everything you know to be true in football. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's the only real way for you to get to know how your team plays, how your teammate's gonna respond to something, where he's gonna be, where you're gonna be, how do you play with one another. It only comes through matches, getting in there and doing it. Otherwise, I mean, you're essentially playing with a stranger, and you don't get that second nature response to things. I mean, that's kind of what gets you out of a jam. You just inherently know where someone's gonna be and how they're gonna be, or where they're not gonna be, where somebody's gonna coming running into the ball if you put it there for them. I mean, all those things are, you only acquire those through playing time, and that was one of the major things that I saw missing with the Mexican national team. I didn't see any basis for the belief that they could make a deep run. The hype train was big. Way too many people drank the Kool-Aid in this case. And that's kind of what drives the Mexican national team train. It's based a lot on hype and emotions and not a lot on what's actually being done on the field. And until that changes, they put the sport before the money, it's going to continue to suck balls. Even given players that are doing real well, I mean, We had Rafa Márquez recently, then we had Cuauhtémoc, and then we had, we've had quite a few, but big names, like Hugo Sánchez, for instance. He was the best striker for Real Madrid, and when he played with Mexico, it's kind of like the Messi syndrome with Barcelona and Argentina. Arguably, Messi has better players than Hugo Sánchez ever did, but the same thing kind of applies. A great player with a decent team, but not well enough that they can make deep runs. And this is kind of a constant with the Mexico national team. They kind of have this savior mentality, and maybe it comes from the culture of the religious base. Messi being the moniker also that he's a messiah, kind of a savior, Maradona, hand of God. Those are all Latin American countries, and the most of them are very, very religious, and it kind of translates to their team. It's just something has to change with Mexico, and if they're ever gonna get past to transcend, to actually become a great team, they have to change their structure. They have to probably stop playing these shitty matches here. Like I said, I'm part of the problem because I'll go too. And again, like, what's the point of bringing in a good team from a business perspective if you're still gonna get the same amount? You're gonna make less money in the return. But from a sport base, if you're making that much money at this point, at one point, you should bring in better teams. To have better opponents, to bring up your fucking game, you know. Otherwise, we're always gonna be stuck in that. We almost made it. 4 years ago, it was the no era penal, which is bullshit. Even if it wasn't, that foot should have never been in that place for the other player to drag his leg and fake the contact. You know Arjen Robben. You know what he does. Your leg should have never been there, but I digress. It was a great World Cup. A lot of things that weren't expected. Croatia making it to the final, crazy. Brazil getting knocked out. That was pretty crazy too. They were a great strong team. Spain not making it either. Germany not getting out of the group stage. It's just a lot of things that did not seem conceivable happen. Most own goals scored with 11 in the tournament. That's crazy. It was a great World Cup, what I got to watch. I think I got to watch 3 full games and bits and pieces here and there, and and I got to see most of those games that I did see were on repeat, and then I saw part of the final, and then I'm watching the replay right now. Unfortunately, because of work, I wasn't able to watch everything live. Even though the games were early, I was just so freaking beat at the end of the day that I just passed out, and I didn't get up till maybe 8, and by that time, most of the games were already played. And then my work took me all day, and then the last thing I wanted to do was just come here and sit. I wanted to spend some time with me Wifi, maybe, and with some friends, just, you know, trying to distress and put in another 12-hour day most of the weekends and most of the days during the week. And I'm still kind of in that train right now. I was just kind of fed up with everything, so I just wanted to do something where I could just let go. But yeah, speaking of the World Cup, and I don't think I really got to talk about the U.S. not making it to the World Cup, and that's another instance of a system that needs to be changed. We have to be able to change the pay-to-play system, because you're leaving a lot of kids in the slip between the cracks because they can't afford to play in bigger cup and better teams. relegated to playing in crappy fields and not in a structure that will be able to let him flourish even bigger. I mean, even if you look at teams that players that come in shitty countries, they're giving a basic structure to be able to come up and get out of the hole they're in and be able to pull themselves out of those places and be able to do something they love and make a difference and make a positive change for their family and those people around them. We need to be able to do that. Oh shit, Copa America next summer, FYI. So we got another tournament. Essentially, it's like the European Championship, but for the American side. And by American side, I mean North and South America. Not America, not MAGA. Fucking shit. Anyways, yeah, the U.S. needs to change their structure, be able to have that. I also believe that they need to bring in the relegation system into the MLS, because otherwise you're playing kind of like you're boxing yourself in and having this isolationist system where you're only playing against yourself, much like your NFL, your NBA, but nobody else is playing that because it's bullshit. And when you're playing in a world, in a sport that is worldwide, you can't see how well you're doing if you're playing against yourselves. You need to be able to have some stakes. I mean, it just goes without saying. You need to have that higher incentive. Because, I mean, if you're just playing to essentially move up and down in the table and nothing really changes, what's the point? What really is the point? At the end of the day, there's no real stakes. If you have a shitty season in this system, you get to come back next year and try it again. But with the relegation, you have a shitty season, you go down to a lower tier league. You don't get to play in the better stadiums against better teams, and your influx of income is way down. I mean, that gives you an incentive to stay near the top. And not only that, you give teams and players that play in the lower division an aspiration and a way into the professional arena. It is just a structure that's been played around the world, and that's something that is also missing from U.S. soccer to be able to have it take a step up at least. I think that's going to be it for my ranty podcast on football. I honestly need somebody else to talk to when I'm doing these, because otherwise I'm just rambling in my head. All right, well, I just wanted to do something for myself and put something out there for you guys in case you want to listen to it. If you listen to it all the way through, I commend you, because this is just the ramblings of a madman in the middle of the night. Hopefully I'll be able to get on with the rest of the gang sometime soon, and we can put up a legit episode for you guys. That's gonna be it for me tonight. This is Barry signing off. Happy that the World Cup came. It left just as fast as it got here. I mean, 4 years came and went in a blink of an eye, and the World Cup came and went in less time than that. All right, guys, take it easy.